Imagine graduating from college right now with lots of debt but no real job prospects. That's the terrifying reality for many rising and recent grads facing the worst job market in decades. As NPR's Yuki Noguchi reports, graduating at a time like this puts many people at a disadvantage for years to come.
Shayna Berenswy gave up a job 5 years ago to get a master's in public administration at an Ivy League school, thinking that degree would help her advance. Instead, she's been looking for work since she graduated nearly 2 years ago. And that's not all.
I mean, I went to NYU on student loans, so I absolutely have debt.
When I reach Berenswy in Austin, she apologizes for tiny yelps in the background. She's babysitting a friend's one-year-old to earn a little cash.
It's scary. I mean, I'm 33 years old. It's very scary to be in this position.
Berenswy's education puts her in the rarefied elite among job seekers. College graduates fare much better than those without degrees. Still, she worries the degree she paid so dearly for might actually be hurting her. So sometimes she erases it from her resume.
It's almost like people are just going to assume that because I have a master's degree, either I'm asking for more money or if something better comes along, I'm going to jump ship.
In fact, she says nothing has come along, not even waitressing gigs she's applied for. And Berenswy's starting to feel a little desperate. When her car got totaled in an accident and she had to get a new one, she tried to turn that into a networking opportunity.
In talking to the car dealer, he mentioned something about working in public service. And I mean, I'm sending my email to the car dealer, my resume to the car dealer. It's just a very surreal experience just looking for work wherever.
At a recent job fair at American University, the power dynamic is palpable. The recruiters stand confidently behind their tables as students line up 10 to 15 deep to meet them.
Hi, my name is Blair Coward. I'm a senior in the School of International Service.
Blair, nice to meet you. I'm Natalie. I'm working.
Blair Coward is a young veteran of the job fair scene.
This is my Dress for Success outfit.
On this, her 22nd birthday, she's soberly dressed in a black pantsuit and nervously clicks her pen as she jockeys for position.
Oh, I talked to him yesterday. Maybe I should go into another line.
The tables for the FBI and the Departments of Defense and Justice are by far the most popular. I overhear one student ticking off a list of federal agency booths she's visited. She loses track and refers to one as the U.S. Department of whatever, whatever. Those tables are busiest, Coward explains, because those jobs are stable. But nearly all the recruiters tell her they have only internships or senior-level jobs. Coward says she's competing against people with far more experience, even for entry-level positions.
And so do you have something lined up for after graduation?
No, unfortunately no.
You look terrified.
Yes, I am. I'm quite terrified. I'm really looking for something more permanent because after August, I'm not only unemployed, but I'm also homeless.
Coward says many of her classmates are going to graduate school rather than face that prospect. And more education does come with serious benefits. The unemployment rate for college grads is less than half that of high school grads, and some degrees are still very much in demand, such as engineering. Nevertheless, today's economy will force many grads to settle for less. John Irons is policy director for the Economic Policy Institute.
That's what we expect to see with the graduates this year, that they'll have less opportunity, they'll have lower incomes, they'll be taking different kinds of jobs than they would be if they were graduating in the height of a boom.
Irons says those who start out at a disadvantage fight to make up lost ground for years, maybe a decade or more. The damage is also psychological. In the same way that people who lived through the Great Depression might hoard food, people affected by the Great Recession are less willing to leave jobs, even if they're underpaid or unhappy. Max Caldwell is managing principal for Towers Watson, an HR consulting firm.
There's a recession mindset and an imprint, I think, on workers who are struggling to, you know, find jobs and get their footing and find a platform to grow a career inside of a organization. I think the recession, in a way, has been fairly traumatic for people trying to make that happen.
Caldwell says that's imparting another lesson for this generation of graduates, that they will have to rely less on their employers and more on themselves to take care of their careers. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News, Washington.
Here's a catchphrase for you, one of the shortest forms in history. That's how the U.S. Census Bureau describes your census form. And this Thursday, April 1st, is the day the Bureau wants you to turn in that form. The 10 questions are meant to count, as accurately as possible, how many people there are in the United States on that day. And this year, the Census Bureau isn't just counting people, it's hiring them. Because of the bad economy, it's hiring very qualified people, which may lead to a more efficient census operation. NPR's Brian Naylor reports.
Herman Kopacek is a would-be college professor who has taught history, philosophy, and business ethics. But with teaching jobs hard to find, Kopacek and his PhD are now working for the census. His job title?
Clerk.
Okay.
C-L-E-R-K, clerk.
And Kopacek says he's perfectly okay with that.
Some people would say I'm overqualified, but I do not look at it as any kind of step down or anything for me. I'm very happy to have this job. I get fulfillment out of it. I know I can do it well. And to tell you the truth, it's less stressful than teaching.
Kopacek is at the Seattle Regional Census Center, where his tasks include helping hire other census workers. He says he's found quite a few professionals in the same boat, well-trained but unable to find work in their chosen fields.
I've met people at my office who've had various backgrounds, economics perhaps, in creative fields such as the theater, other people with a PhD. It is absolutely due to the state of economy and more reduced opportunities.
With the unemployment rate hovering around 10%, professionals of all stripes have taken a look at job prospects and decided a temporary gig with the census looks pretty darn good. Louisa Maritza White works at the Washington, D.C. Census office.
I belong to a particular job group, and many of them are in the same position. They're professionals. They've been in the workforce for a number of years, and yet they're having a hard time landing that perfect job. So until then, this, I think, bridges the gap for many people.
White, who is 55, had been an office manager and is taking graduate courses. Her position with the census and the money it pays has come in handy.
The census job came at a perfect time. It allows me to have those additional funds that I need in order to get through school.
The census will hire over 1 million temporary workers for a range of jobs paying up to $25 an hour. Susan Williams is office operations assistant at the same Washington Census office. She took a census job after being laid off from her law firm.
It's tough out there. There are definitely a lot of other attorneys out there who are looking for work.
What we're finding now is the quantity and quality of the applicant pool is just incredible.
That's Robert Groves, a PhD himself. Groves is director of the Census Bureau. He says the census has been the indirect beneficiary of what he labels a terrible recession.
We have people with a depth of experience at running organizations, running some of our local census offices. We have people with much better IT skills than in general. And when it comes down to doing operations, they need the money. So they work hours that we need them to work.
The upshot, Grove says, work is getting done faster than anticipated and under budget. His only wish that the census could do even more for the unemployment rate. Brian Naylor, NPR News, Washington.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. The Obama administration today announced a plan to dramatically expand its efforts to prevent foreclosures. It would reduce the amount some homeowners owe on their mortgages. The plan also includes a push to help unemployed borrowers. The administration says the program can be paid for out of the $50 billion Congress has already set aside for foreclosure relief. NPR's Chris Arnold reports.
The Treasury Department is trying to tackle the problem of homeowners who are underwater. That is, people who owe, say, $50,000 or $100,000 more than their house is worth. Analysts say about one in four U.S. homeowners is stuck in that situation. And those people are much more likely to give up making their payments and just walk away from their homes. And those empty houses keep dragging down the market.
What we're focusing on is the problem of people who are underwater who want to stay in their homes.
That's Assistant Treasury Secretary Michael Barr. He wants lenders to actually forgive big chunks of what some homeowners owe. That way, the homeowners wouldn't be way underwater, their payments would be lower. But there is one catch. They have to keep making those payments for 3 years to get the debt forgiven permanently. That's an incentive for them to keep paying, and that would help the lenders, who often lose much more money in a foreclosure. To help encourage lenders to do this, Barr says the government will pay them up to 21 cents on the dollar for the debt that they forgive.
We think we'll be able to reach more people under this program. We think that we'll be able to reduce the risk of redefault. So these are important changes that will help work better at serving families.
Some economists like the new plan, especially since upwards of 4 million people right now are headed towards foreclosure. Chris Mayer is an economist at Columbia Business School.
The coming foreclosure wave is one of the biggest risks that could push us into a double-dip recession. So I think the government is doing well to put out a program to address that.
Mayer, though, is skeptical that these expanded efforts will be able to prevent as many foreclosures as the administration hopes. He thinks that the industry is just too tangled up to deal with so many loans on a case-by-case basis. He's also a little nervous from a taxpayer's perspective. He worries that under one part of the plan, homeowners would get their loans refinanced and guaranteed by the Federal Housing Administration.
And lenders are going to have a very strong incentive to give the FHA the most at-risk mortgages, the ones that are most likely to default. And so the government is setting itself up for potentially higher costs in the future by guaranteeing some of these particularly risky mortgages.
Another part of the plan that some people take issue with are the provisions for unemployed homeowners. Lou Finfer is with the PICO National Network, a faith-based group that's been pushing the government for more foreclosure help.
It really makes us angry that banks got loans to bail them out, but Main Street unemployed homeowners are getting zero loans to save their homes.
Finfer's group had been hoping the government would offer cheap loans to out-of-work homeowners. Instead, he says this new initiative will have lenders offer a three-month forbearance, where homeowners don't have to pay their full loan amount.
The average length of unemployment is now about 7 months. So a program that helps people for 3 months or so, you know, doesn't go very deep.
Of course, some commentators are already decrying the program as an unnecessary government handout. They question why it's fair for some people to get taxpayer money to pay down their mortgages, while most people won't get it. Chris Arnold, NPR News.
As we just heard, some commentators have been critical of the Obama administration's new plan to prevent foreclosures. They cite the problem of moral hazard. It rewards homeowners who bought and borrowed beyond their means, and it punishes those who didn't. We're going to hear from one such critic, Barry Ritholtz, founder of the financial blog The Big Picture and author of the book Bailout Nation. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And many American homes are now worth less than the mortgages on them. Should the government be trying to keep them from foreclosure?
Well, all these programs seem to be geared to do two things. First, they're giant giveaways to the big banks. These are designed to prevent banks from actually having to take the full foreclosure write down right now. Even if these mortgages are modified 10, 15, 20%, the number of recidivist delinquents a year later are still in excess of 50%. In other words, more than half of these modifications ultimately fail, and that's pretty much after we've exhausted these families' assets. The banks have squeezed every last dime from them that they can get.
But what's the risk of providing some kind of mortgage relief, whether it's a suspension of full monthly payments or whether it's a reduction in the principal, for somebody whose house plummeted in value and who's also unemployed and really will have a very hard time making the payments regardless?
From a broad perspective, again, you're keeping them in a house that they can't afford, and they'd be much better off going to a place that leaves them a little spare change in their pocket as opposed to just draining everything they have to make those payments. Secondly, if these banks have their balance sheets just festooned with bad loans, we're not allowing them or not forcing them to do what they're supposed to do, which is take the write-down, get it off their books, free up some capital, and move forward as a healthy lending institution.
There's another party to this I want you to address, and that is homeowners who are not underwater, indeed who may have paid off their mortgage or never had a mortgage, for that matter. If the banks indeed do clear all of the bad mortgage loans from their books and we foreclose on everything that's to be foreclosed on, everyone's real estate values would go down as a result, wouldn't they? And therefore, homeowners have a stake in seeing that not happen.
Yes, that's true. But remember, a lot of the value that we've seen, the quote-unquote price gains in homes, were completely artificial. So by propping up home prices, you're punishing everybody who is waiting to buy a house. Anybody who's been saving, you're forcing them out of the housing market because you're artificially maintaining this house price. And I say this as someone, we own a home, we have a vacation property. It's not in my interest to see home prices come down. But for the rest of the economy, it's in our interest to see prices normalize. And that hasn't happened yet.
So if you had the president's ear looking ahead to a few million more foreclosures that seem to be lurking out there in the future, you would say, look, it's going to hurt, but better to let it happen.
Better let it happen. And if you want to help the people who are in these situations, what you could do is offer them move-out money. Instead of giving $14 billion in additional bailout money to the banks for these programs, facilitate a short sale. Give them $1,000 to get a mover, pick up and move across town. There are a lot more effective ways to spend $14 billion than essentially rewarding the banks that were just so reckless and irresponsible. It just doesn't make any sense.
It's Barry Ritholtz, who writes the financial blog The Big Picture. Thanks for talking with us once again.
Thanks for having me.